The Marcato Network family unites once again to talk about their new Zelda-inspired album, Hero of Legend, A Season of Shadow. Carl, Will, Marty, and Carlos are all here to celebrate the beautiful 16-bit tribute album, as we explore the origins and inspirations of this long-awaited project. I'm Brian Kelly, and thanks for joining us for an evening at the Roost.
Hero of Legend, A Season of Shadow is our second volume in a three-part series of The Legend of Zelda homage albums. And yeah, that's incredibly ambitious and daunting. I don't know why we set out to do that, but we did. And the first album that we put out about 3 years ago had an 8-bit presentation. It was simply called Hero of Legend. Right. This album has a 16-bit presentation, and we won't give away what our future third album will be. But the idea behind this entire project is to pay homage to the entirety of the Legend of Zelda series, yep. Not just, in this case, the 16-bit entries. Right. So that's kind of it in a nutshell.
Yeah, because I noticed that there are like songs on here that are like Gerudo Valley, basically a throwback to that. And so you don't just stick to like Link to the Past. So yeah, it is an extremely cool project. And first of all, I just want to congratulate you all on finishing it and reaching the end. It's one of those projects I think that you guys are going to look back on very fondly as one of the best things you ever put together.
Thanks, Brian.
Thanks, Brian.
That's so sweet. Thank you.
No, Carlos, that was just for the three of us.
Oh, crap. All right.
Your gratitude piece happens later. This is...
just let me know when I should talk.
This is our time.
I think it was just for Carlos. Brian
yeah,
was about
honestly,
to say, let me finish.
That's what I was... That's what I did want to speak up to say. To anyone listening to this who has not... I think Carl, Marty, and I, we would all love you to listen to the music we wrote, but we really wouldn't care so long as you... Come to our Bandcamp page just to see Carlos's incredible artwork. It is seriously breathtaking and masterful. If that's one of the only things you take away from this album, I think it's arguably the single most important element.
Oh,
because
come
that's
on.
The thing is it's like all of the visual aspect, you know, in the medium of games, which is kind of what all of this is based off of, there are so many different means that which the, you know, the art assets are created in that we experience them, you know, the sound effects, the music, the sprites, the animation, the way the game plays and feels. But, you know, when it's just an album of music, our hope is that when people are listening to it, they can sort of be immersed in the sonic landscape that we're creating. But the thing that makes it so much easier is when you have artwork that's as beautiful as what...
Yeah, I think I kind of took the project to the next level, basically. I mean, we were excited by the music we were making, but then it was so fun for Carlos, which is basically the last step of this process, to kind of take all of that and listen to all of that music and be inspired by it and then visualize it for everyone. So it was just such a fun collaboration, and I hope we can do many more of them.
Well, and whenever you can have like an interdisciplinary... art project and the different like divisions or teams or whatever can push each other harder and harder and hopefully conjure up more and more inspiration as you kind of have this conversation back and forth. And in our case, it's here are these tracks and we're really excited to see like how you reflect that back with your artistic perspective. And
right. Yeah, that's something I'm curious about because I have a plan here to go through the music of the album. But let's kick off, Carlos. What was the process like of making the artwork? And for people who haven't seen it yet, and this is an audio medium, so you can't see it here, the artwork itself is like a perspective piece where you're on this cliff overlooking the entire land or world map, if you will, that's going to be taking place in the album.
It was supposed to be Cleveland. I think that comes across.
Yeah, absolutely. So you can see a pirate ship and a, like a lava fall and castles. And then in the foreground, there's the hero herself standing on a cliff, looking off at all of it. And that is that's a tall order for a piece of artwork, Carlo. So,
well, okay. So, we've collaborated a handful of times now, and it's always been so fun bouncing ideas back and forth. And, I don't know if we mentioned it on this recording yet, but, the Brueggemanns have kind of been working on this idea for this album on and off for, like, what, 3 years almost, and some of the
over 3 years.
Yeah, some of the tracks they talked about having melodies in their head almost all their lives, which is wild. But usually when we would do a collaboration, I'd hear a little bit and then maybe draw something, and then they would maybe we would bounce back and forth. And this one was a little bit different because for a while, we weren't really sure when this was going to come out because of a lot of different things. Mm-hmm. So I had vague ideas in my head for a while, but I didn't really lay anything down really until towards the end of this project. And it was a bit of a crunch, which can happen with me sometimes. I feel like sometimes I work better that way, even though I hate that happens.
But yeah, I'm the same way.
So
totally.
You have to dig deep and find things that are really cool sometimes.
Yeah. And the pressure of it all kind of helps draw that out. But I had a couple of ideas, and I thought, okay, I'll do a couple of sketches and send it to these guys and see what lands. And in my mind, I knew that the landscape that we ended up going with would be the most work, and part of me was like, please don't pick that one, please don't pick that one, please don't pick that one. But of course, you know, anybody that sees that is going to be like, yes, this is going to capture everything about this world that we're imagining. And
yeah, you know, Carlos, is it too late to go back to that other design, the simpler one? Because I don't want option B. Too much work.
Can we get a few more
now
revisions?
Now we know. Now I feel bad.
No, message received. Okay.
No, it's not. I mean, the reason that I was like, is because I knew that I would want to make it live up to the music that I was hearing. And it was always, and this is like so many other collabs that I've had with these brothers, where it's like, man, this is so cool, and this makes me think of so many things. I want to visualize that, and I want it to do justice to this project. And I, as an artist, being able to do this over and over, I want to show my growth as well. And I feel like in a lot of ways, Carl and I did the Downforce album, and there's like similarities thematically to me in the album art for Downforce and for this Hero of Legend album, where it's like basically
kind of the perspective.
Yeah, and where I landed on this artwork, and again, this is a podcast, so it's not visual at all, but I wanted it to basically fall in between a overworld map, like, you know, like the Zelda games that we're talking about, and actually like kind of like a children's book art, you know. And I think that conceptually and where I landed on that, I was super happy with where it went. So
you know, I'm so glad to hear you say that, because I actually haven't heard that before, that the children's book idea, but it makes total sense to me emotionally. And it's also so fitting to how, like you were saying, I know for Carl, Marty and myself, a lot of the emotions that are conjured up when we think of this music and the kind of feelings that it pulls out of us are very similar to the feelings that you might have if you think back to your memories of young childhood and children's books and all of those things. Because in a way, you know, the Legend of Zelda series is the gamer's equivalent to a bedtime story. You know, Mario, Zelda, those old, they're kind of our myths. I mean, they're not kind of, they are. And I think especially Koji Kondo's scores to, you know, the first title up through, you know, Ocarina and Majora's Mask. And I think beyond the other composers in their own way. But had this childlike innocence, the yeah. sense of the melodies are almost like lullabies, and that the overall message of the story is being distilled to something so simple that a child could understand it and resonate with it. And that's right. in the music, in the artwork, mm-hmm. in the game design, in the lore of the world. And I think the great Zelda games, and I think the great films, the great stories, the great video games, or hopefully in this case, a great piece of music, I think it's tapping into some of the same mm-hmm. narrative wants and needs within us, I guess.
Well, there's definitely a sense of wonder and excitement that the music and I think this art captures.
So before we jump into the music part, one more thing I wanted to touch on was the narrative, because you guys really tried to put a story together, I think more than you've ever done in an album before on this one. And the tracks themselves take you on that story. So Marty, as the person responsible for the written words, the little insert that came with it, what was that process like in creating the story for this world?
Yeah, that ended up being kind of a almost a perfect mixture of fun and terror, which is like, yeah, it's like a kind of a familiar brew, I find. But we had really attempted to create a hopefully like beautiful and maybe ambitious package for the first volume. And that was really right. kind of reacting to Carlos's amazing art. And in volume one, he had taken this approach where we were looking at stained glass windows that were depicting elements mm-hmm. of the world. And we just really wanted to showcase that as much as possible. And I found that I just right. wanted to kind of write more and more. And so there was a piece of prose that hopefully could accompany those images and kind of thread the needle between the images and the music, and mm-hmm. try to draw little poems as though they were, you know, historic legendary poems from this world, but they're, you know, pulling from the concepts of our tracks of music. Mm-hmm. So we should mention the length of the album for volume two. It's over twice as long as the first volume. Yeah. And like Carlos was just describing, the visual art was so much more ambitious even than what the target was for volume one. So it really did feel like to properly reflect that kind of evolution in the music and the art, that the prose had to be pushed a lot further. And I thought mm-hmm. deeper if possible. Actually a lot of the world building, I think for both volume one and volume two, comes first from just the tracks that Will, Carl, and I freely make. And right. that sparks mm-hmm. a lot of imaginative ideas. But in this case, Will had done a lot of really in-depth world building outside of that. And we had some really great conversations as I was kind of preparing to find a way through into the writing. It's a lot of talk for a little piece of writing and a video game mm-hmm. tribute thing, but yeah, hopefully it's not that we're just like taking ourselves too seriously, but ideally mm-hmm. We're just wanting to share these crazy passions with everyone. And so we hope that the passion is what comes across.
And something
here
that I since realized, I don't mm-hmm. think we necessarily set out to do this, but something that I think is kind of cool about how this album was made, I think, but the first one, we really did construct kind of the archetypes of our overworld, and we thought about this imaginary game, and we assigned tracks and mm-hmm. locations and kind of what we would want for the world before we started composing anything. But for this, we worked on it
this
more
was
separately,
a free-for-all
where we each let our ideas spark something. But I think that's actually more accurate to the way that games are developed, mm. where at first, it's sort of like a period of, you know, research, development. You're figuring out things that are appealing in your engine or the particular mechanics. You know, Every department is kind of finding their own way. And oftentimes games that are narrative built, they still start this way. They don't start narrative first. They start mechanics first, and they're built from the ground up.
Especially Nintendo games.
Yeah, and especially Nintendo games. I've been really getting into... It's kind of learning more about the history of how the Metroid Prime games were made. And it's so interesting it's like, to me, that game is one cohesive experience that has a definitive story and an arc, and everything in the world naturally segues into itself. But it's you read about how it was developed, and everything was developed as discrete little ideas. Oh, here's an idea for this kind of boss. Maybe we'll put him here. Maybe we'll put him there. And then it's not until the very end that all this stuff gets put together in a workable logic. And I know nowadays
I think that
there might be some stigma to that,
to
games that try to be more serious. But I think it's cool that that's actually how our album was made, and I think it's just like Zelda.
Well, near the end of the musical process, we did fill in the gaps. We did do a little bit of, okay, we do need this, we need an opener, or we need one more, you know, kind of dungeon theme, or so there were some gaps that we were able to fill at the end, but the majority of the music that was written, it was just like, oh, I think it would be fun to make this kind of a piece, or ooh, I really want to do this kind of a piece, and we didn't really have to answer to anyone else. We just went off and did it.
And I think that's something that's cool about the art and the story, is that it very much fills that role of being the glue that takes all of these different pieces together and puts them in the same world, especially the art. You can see that visually, where if you look at the art, you can see the pirate ship representing the pirate song. You can see the desert representing the desert song. And so you can almost visually see each of the different pieces of music, but now they're all put into context together in one. They become a unity in that piece of artwork.
And I think one of the simplest ways that we tried to do that was simply with referencing aspects of the lore from the first volume in the names of tracks without necessarily hinting at melodic ideas. A great example is Carl's track, Longing for Prince Koji. It has nothing to do with the Prince Koji theme that ultimately does make a reprise on this volume.
Yeah.
But just acknowledging that character, or the Pirates of Aurelia, which calls back to Aurelia Sea, though that piece of music does actually have some of it, shares, you know, a musical B section and everything. But that idea also excited us too, that you could still imagine it's still Heroica, it's still this sort of world. And I know to anyone listening that isn't familiar with these albums, you might just think, you know, okay, we get it. It's such a Zelda knockoff. The goal here is not to create some unique original world. It's shameless pastiche.
Yeah.
But I think the point of that pastiche is to highlight what is so special and sacred about the music of Zelda. Mm-hmm. And in particular, the music of Koji Kondo.
Right. It's trying to celebrate. It's not trying to steal anything. It's trying to hopefully... almost kind of turn this into a party. It's like, ain't this a great time to celebrate how phenomenal Koji Kondo's music is? And we almost want to offer it as some kind of tribute. And it's really in the spirit of thanks and gratitude.
Yeah. And it fits the spirit of Zelda, where each game very much takes the same thematic ideas and just re-presents them. And I mean, that's Zelda game. And it's been through multiple generations of people now getting to experience that. So it's a really good world to do that type of project.
It's like every Zelda game is a reboot, that kind of a feel.
Right.
For me, I'm glad you guys, you know, are bringing that side out in this too. But like, it's a concept album, and we've got a series of two and leading up to a third. Mm-hmm. And it's like, you know, when you listen to like crazy prog rock dudes that have this whole narrative in their head based on an album, this is like basically the same thing. And it's like also really cool to me that it's paying tribute to stuff that's very familiar to anybody that loves the Zelda games. And it's, you're able to play within both, you get like your feet one on each side, like you can do completely original stuff and express yourself outside of just doing a cover of a Zelda track, but you also can allude to the things that people are really familiar with. And it was the same for me with the artwork too. You know, how can I make this hero look, you know, familiar but individual? And how can, and honestly, the other thing too is that, like, we mentioned earlier, we all basically had our own, we were all doing our own things, and then at the end we came together. So it was like, I kind of feel like we all have our own little variations of what this lore is, and we're, we're pulling from that in our own ways, but it all ends up coming together to make this one idea, and this, and it is really nerdy, actually, like way nerdier than just playing a video game is us coming up with the concept for all of this.
Oh, totally. But I think the thing is, like, I think that's how so much stuff actually gets made. To me, whenever I hear Lawrence Kasdan talk about Star Wars, you know, I don't get the sense that he ever had any amount of taking a microscope to what's been in print of the sacred Star Wars lore. It just sort of seems like things are flexible. At one point, you know, Han was going to die. At one point, this is going to happen. At one, it's all sort of up in the air. So I think the idea of, like, we all probably have our own interpretation of what stuff means, who, what characters are like. But I almost think that's inherent in any kind of collaborative creative processes. We all probably imagine something a little different, but that's what's kind of cool is to an audience member that hopefully if we've done an okay job, that means that you're not just getting one person's perspective that you're free to interpret, but in this case you're getting four people's perspective in one piece that's up to your interpretation, which I think could be kind of cool.
Yeah. It's sort of like a wedding feast. And we actually had one of these recently for Will and Emma's wedding. But I think you know, a beautiful wedding is an occasion where everyone is kind of coming together to celebrate people and celebrate a relationship. But what you end up usually hearing as folks go around giving toasts is that people love different aspects of the newlyweds, you know? So I know for the four of us, we all, you know, something comes to mind when we think of Zelda, but it's different things and it's different shades. And you can't help but reveal that, I think, as you're as you're kind of working on a project like this.
Oh, it's super fun. And honestly, for me, one of the most rewarding things that I get out of doing this is when I hear somebody that's listened to the album have their own ideas for what this is. Because we haven't written a Bible, you know? We're basically sending out these nuggets of inspiration and that people can pick those out and make their own fiction out of it is ridiculously rewarding for me, and I love hearing it.
Yeah, that's something I like in the minimalism of how you guys handled it. In like Marty, you only wrote a little bit and there's only the few pieces of artwork. It leaves a lot of room for imagination on the part of the listener, and I think that's really fun. But you give them that starting point to say that invitation to start imagining what this world
And I think that's, to me, I can't picture a better setup to listening to music because for me it's like it wouldn't actually be that appealing to have an annotated album where every single track is set up so explicitly and there's so much like written out narrative that tells you exactly what every moment is. It takes away some of what's magic about music, that it's like it can seem so specific, yet it can work in so many different contexts that it's inherently non-specific. And so what's cool, I think, about what the prose Marty wrote, though it is deeper and hopefully like the album artwork and the length of the album and everything, it goes further in all these directions, but the idea that people could come into it with some smell almost or some aroma of like this fantasy world, but it's not necessarily telling you, you know, 10,000 years ago there was this battle with a whatever. It isn't just an exact, you know, telling you everything. It's just letting you get a little whiff of that feeling that we used to get when we would read instruction manuals to those kids.
Yeah, and that's definitely a big source of inspiration for, you know, the lore that is there, or the little writing that is there, and it's meant to be somewhat misty and intentionally sort of have these gaps and ellipses that, you know, you who are reading it or listening to the music or viewing Carlos's art, hopefully you're filling that in with wherever your imagination takes you.
Yeah. All right. So let's get to the actual music now. The album itself is 24 tracks, so unfortunately, while I would love to go through each track and hear the story behind it, that would give us about like 30 seconds a track, so we're not going to do that. So instead, I decided that each of us would pick the one track we wanted to focus on and kind of hear a little more background behind it. And I'm going to try to do this through chronological order, and I believe that means the first one will be yours, Carlos.
Okay, cool. Yeah, so I think it's fitting that I go first, because the track that I'm picking for tonight is Sakura Woods, which is in the first like quarter of the album, and to me it really represents kind of the real start of the adventure in this album. The song itself has kind of a narrative to it, where you get the sense where you're entering this area and it's beyond basically the overworld. You've left Eroan Village and you're encountering maybe your first like important NPCs in this game that we've created in your mind. And the Sakura Woods is where you're gonna first encounter maybe the more iconic enemies in this game. Mm-hmm. And I had some ideas in my head that kind of reflected the scenery. And one of the drawings that I did is basically like a Stalfos, the skeletons from the Zelda series, but a Sakura Japanese ninja themed skeleton. And so I picture them maybe like popping in and out, and you'll see like a puff of cherry blossom leaves, and next thing you know, there's a skeleton attacking you.
God, awesome. I love that idea, man. I just want to play this game now. I also love the way you framed it, Carlos, because the interesting thing about putting together an album is you don't get the sense that when you play a game, this music interacts in the sense of location. So there's certain tracks you hear again and again, and certain that you hear more at this point in the game or that point in the game. And in an album, it's an entirely linear. I mean, I guess we could have experimented with some amount of reprises or something. But I think what's cool about the way it's framed, the way you described it, Carlos, is the idea of the action part of the game starting off in the woods is something that feels very Zelda. Mm-hmm. But when I think of the 2D Zeldas, that's not really how any of them play out. Usually the first area is a village, or in Link to the Past, it's kind of like you wake up in Link's house. And the idea of starting in a spooky, misty wood with these cherry blossoms is so fun.
Well, we would love to take credit that we had the idea all along, but it was in the 11th hour that Sakura Woods was even put in that position on the soundtrack, on the album. So that was just, we were going through ordering the tracks, truly having, you know, for 80% of them, no idea really where they were going to go, and then figuring different things out. Oh, what if we put this here? Let's try this here. And so it just happened to work really well in that spot on the album. And then I think what's cool is when you listen to it in order, it does kind of get your imagination going of like, okay, if you just left this village and then you're moving into these woods, ooh, it sounds a little mysterious. Like, ooh, I wonder what these woods are like. And so it just worked out really well to have it placed where it was.
Because usually what guides the choices for the sequence are the same things that guide the choices for any kind of album sequence, even if it's not conceptual or homage or whatever, which is, okay, what does it feel like when this energy transitions to this energy, or this key transitions to this key, or this tempo, or whatever? So we're trying to thread those things, and then also be mindful of what story implications might be, or whatever.
Yeah. So, like, where did the idea for this? When was this written? How long ago did you make this one, Carl?
This was, I think, Will, correct me if I'm wrong, I think it was this past late winter, early spring. Does that sound right?
That sounds about right. Yeah, I think within this
2021,
past year,
early 2021. It was a period of time when I wrote probably 90% of my tunes on the album.
Yeah, so what's interesting is we mentioned this on the episode that we posted for our podcast, but what's interesting is we all wrote this music separately. There were no real collabs in the sense of working on music together, which we didn't plan. That's just kind of how it worked out. But it was almost done sequentially in over a period of time where I feel like I wrote the majority of my tracks like a year or more ago. and like had them produced and uploaded to our shared Google Drive. And Carl did most of his within the past year. And Marty has done most of his within the past, within the past recent months, though we've all been working on certain tracks. And like Marty, the oldest melody on the album is one of Marty's from like 15 years ago.
Yeah, I think it was late winter. And what was cool about Sakura Woods is I was very inspired by more recent Zelda games, like definitely Twilight Princess.
Yes.
And some other recent Zelda games. So it was fun to have a Woods theme that to me feels a little bit more modern Zelda.
Yeah, totally.
But it's you're hearing it in a 16-bit presentation. I thought that would kind of subvert what some people might be expecting.
Yes.
So
absolutely.
The other thing I would say is there's really something so heroic about this track and just how it builds and how it just really pushes you forward into this adventure. And it really resonated with me.
Yeah, I did not expect the development that happens in the second half of the track. And it's always a wonderful moment because it already built that kind of mysterious forest atmosphere, but it creates a whole different twist on it when you kind of get the marching forth into it with the drums and all of that. So it's a really cool track.
One of the things that came to me when I was, I think, like washing dishes is I just started, I wrote the basic idea and I started like laying some of it down. But there's an element that I really like in the tune, which is these really slow pitching up and down strings. These like portamentos that are very kind of ominous. And that idea came to me while I was washing dishes and I was kind of singing the melody.
Yeah.
And then I was like, oh, it'd be interesting if I had some really slow pitching up and down strings. And so I was glad that I was able to add that to the tune.
Yeah. Carl never gets his dishes done because he always just has to run off and has to stop.
I probably didn't get them done that night.
Love that.
Yeah. Dude, I relate to that. I feel like I have a majority of my musical ideas either when walking from one room to another or like doing a task and I get interrupted and have to step away. And those are sometimes the best because you're not examining, you're not being so self-critical or self-aware.
Yeah, totally.
Yeah.
It just kind of, your mind is more free to roam around, I guess.
Yeah, totally.
For sure.
All right. Well, the next track we have, I believe chronologically, would be yours, Will.
Yeah, so I wanted to bring in a track that I wrote, and this one is very brief. It's called Serenade of Seasons. And the function of this
piece
of music...
It is so gorgeous.
Oh, thanks, man. The function of this piece of music in terms of what we would imagine it would be like in this game or in the overall story would be that this would be a melody that our hero would sing. She would sing this magical series of notes that would allow the seasons to pass, the seasons to change. And one of the reasons why we wanted to do this is that we thought having a voice for our version of the magical instrument, which is kind of a trope in the Zelda series, we thought that having a magical voice would be a nice twist since it's something that hasn't specifically been done, at least not for like the player character. And there's something that's so primal about the voice. It just seems like a great idea rather than using some obscure instrument or doing an ocarina or something more generic like a flute. And the other reason why I wanted to pick this track is the melody of it is composed within this restriction of a particular pentatonic scale that Marty,
we should call it the shadow scale.
Yeah, we should. That's a great
awesome.
Point.
But that's the name now.
It's the shadow scale, everyone.
It's a scale that I started tinkering around thinking about maybe 5 or 6 years ago. Because I knew eventually, you know, I think at that point we had the name Hero of Legend. We knew someday it would be a thing. But the first volume, we hadn't shared any of the music. Maybe I'd written the overworld theme and like that was it. I'd always been playing around with different ideas for a magical scale because I thought that would be fun. And I was thinking of a lot of more like Japanese scales, like something that you'd hear being played on like a Kodo. But eventually I came up with this collection of notes played in this specific order in terms of how I would imagine it as a scale, being E flat, F, G flat, C natural, and D flat. It's an interesting series of notes that, and the reason why I chose it is, to me, it has some of the harmonic and melodic implications that happen very frequently and are very at home in Koji Kondo's music. So what's cool about this sequence of notes is it works really well in the key of E flat minor, but it also works really well in the key of D flat major. It works really well in the key of G flat major. And what's interesting actually about the way the album happened is this scale wasn't used as much as I think we initially imagined, though we could potentially come back to it in another volume of Hero of Legend, that idea, but that hopefully this series of notes is versatile enough that, like the notes Koji Kondo chose,
it's peppered throughout the album.
Ocarina, yeah, that it you won't necessarily tire of it, but there's a lot of da 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 da, that type of, I can't sing it very well, but
I'm glad that we didn't overdo it, because I think the album has more mileage just having being used in a few spots here and there.
Yeah, so the main place that you hear it is the very first track, which theme of nature, ya da 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 da, the in scale order it would be ya da 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 da, ya da 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 da, is sort of the scale that we're talking about. And so this Serenade of Seasons is just like a nice little 30-second jingle, kind of like an Ocarina of Time. You know, the idea is you play the song and then you kind of experience the short little song moment that has this sort of tag ending. And I wanted to create, because it's kind of a specific feeling of like you hear the first couple notes of something, then there's this like magical sound effect that sounds like you're being whisked away, and then you just hear this kind of simple but rich classical fairy tale-esque melody whisk you away, and then it has this nice ending with a big, you know, rallentando, and it slows down, and that feeling of like the Serenade of Water honestly just so affected me at a young age. The idea of something that could feel so simple, so complete, and so perfect and be over in like 25 seconds just blew my mind. I like the idea of a piece of music that can be really short but you don't feel like you need any more.
Yeah, absolutely. I think it's one of the most uniquely Zelda ideas, like this track in particular. It couldn't be from anything except a Zelda album, because that idea of creating those small songs, that are something that's so impressive about Zelda music to me, is it is like fairy tale fantasy music, but it's not just making the generic kind of heroic everything's in Dorian kind of feel that a lot of fantasy games would have. And it's also not doing like just major scale happy stuff the whole time either. There's this really specific sense of melancholy and mystery that you get from Zelda music that I think
it's unique.
Yeah. That is perfectly captured in this track.
Yeah, and Kondo's music, like, it's as cute as it is melancholy. Mm-hmm. And there's, I don't know, for me, there's just nothing else in the world like that's holding both of those energies.
Yeah, I mean, I think, absolutely, honestly, that it's something that music can explain better than words. But to me, mm-hmm. it's like the feeling of why I wanted to do this album is in Marty's melody for the Dear Koji. Ya-da-da-da-da-da-da-da. Like that kind of tune that's so yearning and simple, and it feels like one phrase follows another phrase so effortlessly. Yet when you actually look at the notes, it's interesting. Wow, it starts with this fourth interval, but starting on the root and going to the fourth, which is kind of a dissonance in a major key. And it's like these cool ways that it's both diatonic yet gets this sort of natural jazzy dissonance, but it's never overly elaborate. It never feels like it's show-offy or it gets too classical or clever. Yeah. It's like, that's what's genius about Koji Kondo. It's never showy. It's never flashy. It's never excessively verbose for its own sake. And it especially Zelda music, it just feels whatever it's trying to accomplish, it's just executed perfectly. And I think that's a type of thing that we can strive to accomplish writing a melody, but it's hard to talk about without just analyzing every specific thing about this particular melody and why I chose this note as opposed to that note, because you know, it starts to get pretty geeky at that point. It actually has a very strong emotional impact and is the reason why, like you were saying, Brian, like this X piece of music feels like it belongs in Zelda, and you know, it doesn't just sound like generic fantasy. There are specific musical traits that are unique to Koji specifically.
You really can't overstate how magic that is, you know, how with such a limited sound set they were able to inspire so much imagination in it, you know, just whisking you away in 8 and 16 bits, like, wow.
Well, that's why Koji can write a melody like ya da 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 da. I feel like if he didn't come of age writing for, you know, the NES, he wouldn't be so deftly skilled at these gallant leaping melodies that are chromatic and outline a progression but feel rich and satisfying, because it's like you have to do that on the NES, because like you can't have chords comping away. You know, your melody is one of the chord tones at all times, and your little bass line is one of the chord tones at all times, and you only have one other note.
I think that's part of what all of us respond to so much with what we would call classic video game music is really the music had to carry so much more of the imaginative experience. So you get this sense of incredible yearning and bombast and daring and all the rest of it in so much of the early game music that we love, especially from Koji. He's doing what we're trying to do in our little nerdy project, which is like evoke how a grander story would make you feel. And I it's fair to say, I suppose, that that same burden isn't put on contemporary music for games. And so if a piece of music were to do that, and it feels kind of aesthetically right, that would be almost more like a luxury or a treat. But really, that kind of daring is, that was the aesthetic language of older video games. Like that's how we got to dream about them and obsess about them.
Yeah, and the other thing that I think is, I guess not mentioned too often, but I mean, obviously we really love this stuff and we know it, is that how, you know, before there was original music in a lot of games, they were really using a lot of public domain sounding like songs for like mid 80s, early 80s, like games. And I think that it's so interesting to me that, you know, these public domain kind of songs that everybody are like, they're classics, and, you know, how it's almost like the evolution into that kind of led Koji Kondo to create these melodies that really like resonate with these songs that everybody just instantly knows.
I mean,
knows.
That happened in the first Zelda game. Like, the overworld was originally going to be like a piece of classical music, and then they found out
Bolero,
they couldn't get the rights to it.
All right. Our next track is Carl's. Kadok's Cabin. We're jumping ahead like 10 tracks on the soundtrack here, but why don't you tell us a little bit about where this one came from, because this is a really unique song in the album.
Yeah, I had a hard time deciding which track to talk about today, but this one is definitely unique. And what sets it apart from a lot of the tracks on the album is, I think, if I'm being honest, I was specifically trying to do something that was more inspired by modern Zelda games. To be honest, Breath of the Wild more than anything, which might be surprising when you hear, you know, a 16-bit album. For me, Tarrytown was the primary inspiration for this track. That was my favorite piece in Breath of the Wild, and it was just some of my favorite, fun and imagination music in that game. And so I was like, okay, what kind of side quest could our little adventure have? And I imagined this really lovable character who eventually I named Kadok. And I imagine, he lives in the woods and he's building a cabin. And maybe if you help him finish his cabin or build a second cabin, you know, he gives you some useful weapon or something. Or maybe he does something that makes your quest easier. Or maybe it's a time when your horse has to rest anyway. And so while your horse is resting, maybe you help Kadok build his cabin. I had a lot of those ideas in my head. So if you listen to this track, in a piece of music, I tried to capture a little bit of that experience in Tarrytown where, as we all know, the music expands and evolves the more you help out the people in Tarrytown. And it gets, you know, the arrangement gets bigger. And so I kind of did that a little bit. In this track, I didn't take it as far as I could have. I mean, I could have made it like 12 minutes long and had all, you know, five different variations, but yep. It's basically just two variations. There's a very sparse version, and then kind of the rhythm section comes in. And I thought that was enough to get the sense of, okay, you know, this is expanding. And another thing that I think is kind of unique about this track is, I think this album is cool because there's plenty of Link to the Past samples used in the album. Maybe like 75% of all samples that are used are probably from Link to the Past, but we're not afraid to use, you know, stuff from other games too. There's occasional samples from maybe the Final Fantasy series or Chrono Trigger or what have you, DKC2. This was a track
or Mario
that,
even.
Yeah, this was a track that almost all of the sounds were not from A Link to the Past.
Yeah.
So the track itself, as far as how it sounds, I didn't want it to immediately sound like Zelda. I wanted the emotion and like the sense of imagination to remind you of Zelda. But the start of the track, it's acoustic guitar, and then what might be considered mandolin, it's kind of hard to tell in the Super Nintendo, from a bunch of different games. And so that was kind of the idea. And I just wanted to make a piece that was very sweet, very serene, that captured the sense of nature that I was inspired by with some of Will's early tracks. I really wanted something to kind of celebrate being in the woods and just being at peace.
Yeah. It really feels like a break from the rest of the album, especially like you said, it sounds so fresh and it's like right before the ending, the third act kind of kicks off.
Mm-hmm. Well, it's just so unmistakably Zelda. I love the arpeggio. And I mean, it makes me think of something we were just talking about before, which is that sort of simplicity that if you just have two voices. And what I love, what Carl intentionally does with this track is that it really sounds like one person playing like a harpsichord or a lute or I picture it has that earthy feel because it's all that one timbre. And it really just is left hand arpeggio, right hand melody. In that kind of simplicity is what makes Zelda music great, but that this particular melody and the way it develops in the chord progression is so Zelda-y, and it makes me think of Twilight Princess. But, you know, speaking of Skyward Sword, which was recently re-released in this sort of special edition for the Switch, but there's a lot of music in Skyward Sword that has this emotional quality of sort of a pause from the action, a little area off the beaten path, maybe it's a little island in the sky that you fly to.
On our listening party, Will asked me, and this actually was a track that did feature some MIDI performance from me, which is definitely not something that typically we would think of doing in a Super Nintendo album. And any of my other tracks were definitely a lot more quantized. But especially in the first section of this track, it was a little bit more performative. And I thought that was kind of an interesting feel that we might not get anywhere else in the album. And then one of the cool things that happened when we were ordering the tracks is we were imagining, oh, okay, maybe what happens is the track that preceded, two tracks preceding this is Nagata's Farm, when it makes sense, okay, that's maybe when you get your horse in the game, in this imaginary game. And then Heroica Field Awoken would be, okay, that's when you're now exploring the overworld on horseback. So that's when the music expands and changes. And then maybe Caddick's Cabin, like we said, maybe that's when your horse needs a break or something. But what's cool is immediately following this track, we have the Canyon Riders, which Marty was kind of envisioning is like a horseback desert theme. Yeah, so it just really worked.
Yeah, Caddick's kind of works as this thing. One thing that I want to mention that I love about this piece of music, because I think this is, I'm glad that you chose this, Carl, because I think it's a great little microcosm of some of the fun ways to do storytelling in an album like this. I love how simple it is that it isn't this evolving piece. And I love that you did two variations. Like there's basically the strip down version and there's the one with the rhythm section, as opposed to three, because I think the obvious idea would be three. You hear how it evolves, but what I like about this is, to me, it actually feels more cinematic and more like a payoff, because you see the length of the track, you expect something
wanted
to change. But what's cool, I also feel like you kind of, there are moments you set up where I remember the first time I listened to it, and when it goes, I remember kind of feeling like, huh, I don't know how I feel about that. Or there were certain phrases where there was kind of like a sort of syncopation of something. There was like some kind of rhythm that I'm like, oh, it almost sounds like the lute player is like being a little more improvisatory. But then when you get the full opened up arrangement, now that's not just on the same instrument. Now it's this sort of call and response phrase, and you hear this whole, and I loved that feeling of, it's almost, what I love about it is there is no definitive version. It's like when you're listening to the calm atmosphere of the first half of the track, it, you get the sense that like, oh, this is what the piece is about. Yet there are certain parts of the melody that sound more at home in the version with all the big production. So what's cool about it, it feels like it's Caddick is being fulfilled to his heart's desire, rather than this is a track and then this is an arranged version of that track. It feels like this is a track that wants to be something more, and then it ultimately gets there. And I thought that was such a fun, almost gamey way of experiencing that just with music.
Yeah. So, I mean, it's definitely an oddball. If I'm not mistaken, it was the last track that I wrote for the album. Yeah. And so I was glad that everyone was willing to put this one on.
And I think one other standout part of it is the bird sound effects. I love those.
Amazing. And also that they groove, which feels like just feels so right.
Yes.
I wanted them to be grooving.
That comment that Will made just a moment ago, it's like, It's funny, I think, for any of us that have really spent countless hours with, say, a Nintendo game, you find yourself meditating on these concepts that actually loom a lot larger in your life. And that idea of, oh, I thought I understood what this piece of music is, but when it's actually surrounded by these elements, or when I'm in this environment, it tells me more. It's that's hopefully what we're trying to kind of celebrate here too, is that we don't just think that the Zelda music is cool. It's that there's something so profound to it, and we can't really hope to conjure up, you know, profundity ourselves, but hopefully we're at least pointing the way to, it's like, okay, look at all of these like incredibly deep life lessons that are there in Koji Kondo's music or in other, you know, subsequent composers' music. But yeah, we just love this track. The album would not be the same without it.
Yeah, absolutely. All right. Our next one is yours, Marty.
So this was probably one of the earlier ones that I worked on for this volume two album. And it's hopefully capturing
the second maybe that you worked on.
Yeah, I think that's right. I remember kind of working on it at the piano at our recording studio that that I work at late at night and alone, which feels right. And I just, I'm hoping that it captures one of the things I so love about Kondo's music, which is just how personal and beautifully sad it often is. And not sad in trying to kind of like manipulate your emotions or make you cry, but sad just in a very truthful way. Just reflecting kind of the depths of life. I think I was saying a little bit ago, but yeah, just how cute his music is while being so sad. And there's something, especially with A Link to the Past, where I feel like more of the curtain is pulled back on who this man is. You can't really remember what Zelda music was like kind of before that evolution so easily, but there's no reason why the music had to be that melancholy, had to be that deep, had to be that sort of haunted and sad. And so I was thinking about my memories of really falling in love deeply with A Link to the Past, and just also wherever Kondo's music pops up. So this is called Healing House, and there are a lot of beautiful moments of healing in the Zelda music. Song of Healing is probably a prominent one. And I remember a really fond memory, actually not in Majora's Mask specifically, even though it's incredible in that game, but actually in Twilight Princess, there's a sequence where you become the wolf, and the wolves are actually like howling out the his song of healing. It's just like in tears. I remember playing that. So this is an attempt to celebrate that. And as far as the story goes, I was imagining there were going to be a lot of dangers that we would put our hero through. And here is hopefully a safe haven from the rain where she can reflect and hopefully find some healing.
Well, Marty, and I just have to say, you completely nailed this on every level. That feeling of safety, insecurity, and that you've weathered a storm and are getting a respite from it, which feels
serenity.
So Zelda. But in specific, just the way that this piece develops melodically, the so Koji.
Someone on the listening party, it might have been you, Brian, said that this feels the most authentic, like, to like Koji Zelda music.
And I
think it's hard to argue against that.
Melodically. And also the little bit of counterpoint in the beginning, the that little suspension there and the way that all moves, it's so elegant, and it just man, it's like a dagger right to the heart in that beautiful way. And in the same way that like Grandma's theme,
I was thinking of that one too.
Sort of happy, sad feeling.
The last thing I think is very important about this track on the album is that we have a lot of ballads earlier on in the album. We were actually, when we were going through the tracks, Marty, I think, was actually a little worried. He's like, oh, do we have enough like rockers, or like not rockers, but like exciting ones? Like, do we have too many ballads? But I think the placement of this near the end of the album is so powerful, because it's like one of the last little respites that you have before you really have to save the world.
The next couple are very intense, but I mean, I don't know if I've ever heard a non-Koji Kondo track that more captures the soul of Koji Kondo than this one. It's really
well.
Perfect.
I mean, I think the only other ones that I could say that I would point to would be Dear Koji, which is a melody in a piece that Marty wrote, like I said, like 15 years ago, but it's imagined in these albums as, you know, Prince Koji and the theme of Prince Koji. But I also think that The waterfall theme from the first volume shares some DNA with this one. They both use that same progression starting on the 4 chord and descending down diatonically with a lot of emphasis on the 7th degree of the scale in the melody. And that's something that happens in a lot of the Zelda games, principally, you know, Ocarina of Time, Majora's Mask, and especially Link to the Past, in a lot of different places. But it also, what's cool is like that chord progression is just so Zelda that is something that other composers, I think Minako Hamano in the music for Link's Awakening composed that theme that you hear very early on that is kind of works in a similar way. That really gorgeous kind of piece starts on the fourth, starts on the 4 chord, I should say. I feel like Marty, I'm not trying to say that this one is, because what I love about it is I feel like you also make it your own. It's not a sound alike of any particular track. It's a true and genuine love letter to Koji Kondo. And that's really what I think the best moments on this album come from, that level of love and inspiration and devotion to the source material. It isn't from a, how can I make my own version of this? It's more just like, how can I express the feeling in my heart
with
that music,
a new original piece.
I totally agree with that. Mm-hmm. And the other thing that I wanted to say is that I didn't ask you guys for any types of tracks like, hey, we should do this, or hey, what if you guys did this? But in my brain, I wanted like a sanctuary track or a church or a chapel. And when I heard this track, I was like, all right,
you got it.
I don't even need to say anything. It's here.
We got it.
See, and that's the other thing that we wanted for this album is to kind of like, so we didn't want to just do a fairy fountain theme. And so we sort of split up that role into the fountain melodies plural, ultimately, because Marty originally wrote a different thing, and that's in the DNA of the final Run to the Fountain track, but there's also this other melody, and it feels like this whole romantic moment. So we sort of separated the romance and elegance of the fountain from like the fairy aspect of it, which we have
Nico the fairy,
literal track Nico the fairy, which has the similar kind of like the harp element. And I think a similar thing happened with the sanctuary. We didn't just want to do a track called Sanctuary. So I did the House of the Lost Souls, which has kind of, it gets into some of the more doom and gloom medieval
like
feelings
the dark
of that
spirituality
track, but goes off in a different tangent. And with Marty's Healing House, it gets into the more sweeter, the emotional implications of, I think, what the sanctuary might be like in a more modern Zelda game, if it's an area where it's more of a safe space, where I feel like the way it works in Link to the Past is kind of like, it's the point in the story where it's like the all hope is lost moment.
Yeah, House of Lost Souls was almost the track I went with because I just adore that track so much. It's so beautiful, and it does.
Well, thanks. So that's another one that uses that scale melody. The da 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 da. It uses the da da.
Yep. And you're right. I hadn't made the sanctuary connection before, but I definitely hear that DNA in it now that you mentioned it. But the track I actually ended up going with is the perfect track to end with. Remembered and Forgotten, which is the ending theme, also composed by Marty. So, Marty, why don't you tell us a bit about where this one came from?
So like Will and Carl have mentioned, there were a few different shifts where we were more actively working on the album. And luckily, we were able to be maybe even a little more kind of casual and relaxed about who's doing what and what tracks we need to kind of fulfill our vision for this little thing. But in kind of like our last meeting, Carl mentioned we realized there were some more gaps we needed to fill in. And we finally decided like, okay, we need to assign like who's going to do the ending. And I think I was both really excited to do the final piece and also like really scared. It's the original staff role for the game is like, the piece is just so meaningful for me. It's, it's in that category. And this might sound weird.
Link to the Past.
There's some pieces of music that, yeah, sorry. There are some pieces of music I love so much that I want to like very rarely listen to them.
Yeah, I get that.
And
right.
Which is maybe, I don't know, dumb or something. So I was definitely feeling a lot of pressure. And as I was working on my remaining tracks, it just became clear to me. It's like, oh, I think this is probably going to be the last thing I finish, both because it's like, it was just more emotional weight for whatever reason. And I wanted to afford as much time as possible that it could be strong. And so initially I had this other idea I was really trying to make work for the A section melody, and I just felt like it was too emotionally held back or restrained or something. And as I was working on it, I actually like moved to the guitar for a second, and all of a sudden this melody that I had written years ago after pretty intense kind of personal situation in our life and in our family, all of a sudden came into mind, and I realized like, oh, it has the kind of a little bit of the rhythmic character that I so love of the original staff role, but just kind of unearthing this thing from the past. I got really choked up because it felt like that's part of what the lore of Zelda is. It's like, you know, you're unearthing
so fitting,
these things
though.
From the path, and it just happened to kind of fit exactly where I was looking for something to fit. So I then just wanted to try to kind of surround it with as much kind of emotion and storytelling and reflection as possible. So it opens with a tiny little kind of like pomp and circumstance kind of march, which is more pastiche and tongue-in-cheeky than the Link to the Past kind of march celebration. And so the title is trying to kind of evoke, you know, like one moment you're kind of in the sun and in glory, but it won't always be that way. And at least for me, captured a little bit of how I feel inside the Zelda games.
Well, and then Marty, I think that march really, really set up the following emotional melody, like, perfectly. Like, it's such a tragic and beautiful and like and it's like a mix of happy and sad emotions that melody has. And I think the fact that it's preceded by that more pastiche march, I think, was such a perfect change of energies.
Oh, thanks, man. One last little thing to listen out for. So the scale that Will mentioned, that's almost like kind of a Japanese Hirajoshi scale, but more Koji-fied, more Zelda. So there's a flute that kind of hauntingly creeps in at one moment in the piece, and it's basically almost like a mantra kind of rollicking in that scale. And then there's a tiny little nod to the Heroica overworld theme, Will's theme, before we come to a close.
Yeah. No, it's an incredibly beautiful piece, and that story does not surprise me, because it's one of those melodies that you can't help but get emotional listening to it. And I think that's only fitting for a staff role in Zelda, because I know what you mean, that's a hard act to follow, because there are very few things to get me as emotional as the staff roles of Zelda
right?
games.
Yeah,
there's
yeah,
just for sure. Something so bittersweet about those, and I think that this captures that almost impossible to capture feeling.
Oh,
so
thanks,
well.
Brian.
And then, you know, it's like the experience of, for us, like watching, you know, the listening party and being there and celebrating it with, you know, a lot of our friends, and then seeing Carlos's art alongside this music. I mean, it was moving for us. I mean, like, we're the ones who like made this project. And so like, we hope that it's moving for others too.
Well, and one of the things that I want to say is like, even if it is only moving to us, I feel like it's worth it. And something that I have, and I do feel like insecure.
I mean, I had fun.
I feel insecure even about the idea of this episode going out, the idea that like anyone has any interest, you know, what we have to say about the, it seems so like, I totally get that maybe some of your listeners won't know who we are or mm-hmm. won't care about this yeah. or that this seems like, you know, too much information. If I get the album, I'll get the album.
Or they're sending us like our their BetterHelp login and password. So that
yeah, can... I mean, I completely understand if it's not your thing, but just I think what we're trying to express is like genuine love and adoration and admiration for not only, you know, Nintendo and these games we grew up, not only the incredible mm-hmm. music and artistry of Koji Kondo, but I really, and this is going to be cheesy, but the brotherly love that we have for each other. And that includes you, Carlos.
That includes
and it
Carlos.
Includes you too, Brian. Aww.
Now, of course I know Carlos.
I really feel like that's awesome.
So Carlos, I know this was this the only track that you hadn't?
So for me, and this has happened with the last couple of projects, I made a point to save the last couple of tracks until it was released. So I would still be able to have just a step away from it that I would be able to enjoy it objectively. And hearing the last two tracks that Marty put together, and actually remembering that I know that Marty, for us, it was kind of down to the wire too, putting the final touches on everything. And me and Marty were kind of going back and forth, kind of pushing each other to like,
right,
like cheerleading
right.
each other to get it done. Mm-hmm. So I was already pretty invested in what it was going to end up being like. And like Carl said too, you know, seeing it all together and at the listening party, how Carl put together the video. So you get to see the different areas. And honestly, I put the landscape together with that in mind, because I think a really fun thing that happened that I didn't plan when we did Downforce together was that he focused on the different aspects of the artwork that resonated with certain tracks. So knowing how that went and how fun that was to see, I knew that I wanted there to be something like that for this album art too, and how that all came together and how everybody seemed to really be having a good time listening to the album and seeing the artwork related to it.
It was just fun, guys.
Super fun.
Yeah. We had a good time, and we hope everyone enjoys it. Just,
yes,
you know,
exactly.
Have fun with it. Make it your own.
Yeah. And you guys were talking about how, you know, even if you're the only ones who enjoyed this, it was worth doing. That's kind of how I approach this interview, where I'm like, I just want to hear more about this album because I had such a good time listening to it. And I really wanted to hear the...
Yeah, I was alluding to this, but like, I know for me personally, it's like, this was all just an exchange of inspiration. I think that's what we hope is, like, we are inspired by Koji and the other Zelda composers and that music that we love. And inspired us to do this project, and we hope that maybe it inspires someone else to do something else.
Someone totally make this different. Into a game.
And
okay?
Carlos, I think, was inspired by the music. We're inspired by
someone out there. Make the full game of Hero of Legend. And
well, and I mean, I think the last thing that I just want to add to that is that I've heard some people, and like some of my friends have even made comments along the lines of like, "Oh, I love it. It seems sort of like tongue in cheek." That like the music is like self-aware, that it knows like the limitations of game music. And I don't think that was none of our intention with any of the music we make is to kind of come off as like rip off or making fun of what games are. It really is truly meant to be a celebration and in an experience of fulfilling kind of a childhood wish, where like, you know, as a kid, didn't you wish that there was another 16-bit Zelda? I imagine when people were waiting for Ocarina of Time, I'm sure people would have killed for a true sequel to Link to the Past on the SNES. And so by making an album like this, it sort of fulfills that childhood dream of what if there was more 16-bit Zelda music that was, you know, it felt like a real score that would be in a real Nintendo game. And it's a fun challenge as a composer, but it's as a listener, as a gamer, it fulfills that sort of childhood wish, I guess.
Well, and I think in our goal with it, our primary goal is that someone who loves those games and that music will really get a kick out of this and will kind of be transported back
Absolutely.
To that time.
Well, thank you all so much for coming on and chatting about this album. For people who want to pick it up,
thank
it
you.
Is
thanks, Brian. This is so nice, man.
Yeah, no, this really appreciate so much it. Fun. This is exactly what it's I was hoping honor. To be able to do and get some more of the behind the scenes on this. For anyone who wants to pick it up, it is Hero of Legend, A Season of Shadow on Bandcamp, and I'll link it in the show notes. It's really a fantastic album. I mean, we only touched on a sliver of the music that's actually on there, and I think all of the tracks are excellent. So you guys knocked it out of the park on this. Looking forward to, you know, the next album in 3 years or 5 years or whatever.
It's going to be a Scott album. It's completely a Scott Zelda.
You see,
album.
That's what I was guessing, but Carlos, I'm going to have to edit that out now.
Oh, I spoiled it. Well, I mean, joking aside, if you do enjoy this album, this is the second mm-hmm. album. So if you're just hearing about this now, you have a whole other album of music yep. to check out. And it's absolutely. Just as good in an 8-bit way.
Yes.
Yeah, you'll have so much fun with that album as well.
Yeah.
And really amazing artwork again by Carlos. Similar kind of inside booklet with mm-hmm. prose and extra artwork and stuff. This is a fun project. I definitely don't want to rush into mm-hmm. the third volume because then I sort of feel like we can never really do another one because good things with Zelda must sort of come and end in threes. And there's also the sort of trilogy pressure where I feel like third acts are often very hard
yes.
to do.
So true.
It'll come out when it's ready,
it can actually just be
everybody.
The project that's forever delayed and people just get more and more hyped about but never actually comes out. That'll be a good plan. All right. Thanks, everyone. And thanks, everyone, for listening.
Thanks, Brian.
Bye-bye.
Thanks so much, Brian.